Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following program is brought to you by the Preferred Home Team. Content is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal or real estate advisors. Welcome to the Real Estate Radio Hour, a forum of ideas, plans, and expert advice on all things real estate. Andy Prasky with RE/MAX Advantage Plus was named Super Agent by Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. Chris Rooney of RE/MAX Preferred is a Lakeshore and Luxury Home Specialist. Together, they cover the Twin Cities. This combined dynamic duo has sold over 2,000 homes, ranked in the top 1% nationwide, top 10 in the state of Minnesota, and still have time to get together every Saturday to talk about real estate. Here's Abby Prasky and Chris Rooney, Denny Law, and the Real Estate Radio Hour.
And good morning. Welcome to another edition of the Real Estate Show here on 830 WCCO. It's St. Patrick's Day today. Chris and Andy, are you guys Irish? I think Chris is.
Well, it's all
absolutely
everybody's
O'Rooney.
O'Rooney, yeah.
O'Rooney
today.
All right, good deal. Well, what are we going to talk about on this St. Patrick's Day?
Andy, what are we talking about?
I would like to talk about the weather. What a great stretch we've had this week. Tell you what, it's really waking
up.
It's
got to help you guys,
market.
Doesn't it?
Oh, big
it helps
time.
The real estate market. It really does. Yeah. Weather is a big factor in it. I was laughing because I always, when we get big snowstorms, you know, and say we don't have, maybe something was on last fall and it's kind of going into the winter, and you see a lot of winter photos that are just bad. You know what I mean? That you get just dirty looking, then you get that brand new fresh snow. And so I snapped a few. Now I got to switch back to the other pictures because we're losing it all.
Yeah, but it's relevant. I mean, the market's moving fast enough where those listings deserve to have fresh photos. I think everybody listening can appreciate that. Now, keeping up with the weather this week, you know, where I heard, you know, there you get a little swath of snow through here and there, and then all of a sudden it's 50 degrees the next day. So it's a little tricky, but I tell you what, the idea there is that, you know, Chris and I have talked about this before with planning for the season that you decide to list and having some photos of that house and other seasons to share with those buyers so they don't have to do the guessing game. So, you know, if there's a couple of the green and blue photos, as you call them, Chris, where they show the dock out in the lake and it actually has the boats and the jet skis, that's kind of a fun thing too. And then actually showing the gardens that are full bloomed and looking wonderful, and that helps sell that even in a time of year where you can't, you know, visually see it.
Yeah, no question. You know, today is Cindy Coble with Title Smarts with us. We are going to find out what the difference is between abstract and torrents today. So kind of excited about that. We get that question a lot. You get it a lot when you're out, when people are filling out their disclosure statement, and then ask if it's abstract or torrents.
I've always been told you find the one in the freezer. Is that true?
That's true. That's where that abstract is. When Mr. Washington handed it over to Mr. Lincoln, and then Lincoln gave it over in the Homestead
Act. Remember
1861,
when we had
just so you know.
We had Bernie in here, and we were talking about that, where he actually had an original abstract that went, it was like a history book of interesting stories, you know.
Right.
And
when we had the deed, and actually when Abraham Lincoln signed it over, between the time he was inaugurated and by the time the Civil War started, they had deeded over that land, and we have that deed. And I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah. So.
And we still, a lot of states still really use the abstracts in the metro Twin City area. We've kind of gotten around that where we're just doing searches 30 and 40 years back. But
that's the big thing. It's what the mortgage companies want, right? That just that there's no problems.
Yeah, and the underwriters have certain minimum requirements that we're looking back. So it's literally either through a computer system or we send people to the county who that's what they do is they research the property records and bring us back those documents so we can examine them and make the requirements.
Yeah, so people who have had abstract property and that haven't sold in a while, they do. They sometimes have it sitting in the freezer where it said, hey, put this in a safe spot because you never want to lose it.
Right.
Because in the old days when we had to redo those, it was very expensive to redo them.
Yeah, it used to be like $800 or more to reproduce them.
No.
And I still think that if you have one, it's great to keep it because it's such a nice thing to be able to give it over to your buyer because some of them have old feather writing on the initial pages.
Yes. No, yeah. And that's what's so neat about it is it is a historical document. Not only is it a factual thing, but what we're finding, though, is as we've gone along and progressed with, you know, a lot more, there's probably, even looking back, it surprises me, the farmer that got divorced. You never, oh, back in the day, everybody stayed married for 50 years. No, they didn't. And, you know, and there were so many changes or brothers that
they just put them out in the backfield.
The brother that thought he owned a third of that farm and he didn't. And then there's, I mean, all kinds of issues with that. So over the years, we've become more sophisticated. I mean, nowadays, I mean, obviously, when you buy a title and it's insured, we're scrubbing that thing. I mean, there's no question. There's no interpretation. It's factual. And if it's not, we have insurance to back up what may have been missed. And so we can feel pretty confident today buying.
Right. And then, you know, when we go down and pull those records, they're the actual records from the documents that were filed. So a lot of it's computerized today. And but sometimes if you haven't had a transfer in like 30, 40, 50 years, we may actually have to go in and find that old microfiche plat books and find those documents. And like you were saying on the old abstracts, some of that information, those transfers, they're quite scandalous.
Oh, for sure.
And very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was done. Sometimes it was done. I mean, people didn't, you don't, the back checking and the backgrounds of it, some were transferred through cash. And so they were doing it their own way and how they did it. And some things got missed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you have title insurance.
Right.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, you say they have to go back and scrub because they really do. Because in reality, versus what you're actually borrowing or what equity it is, I mean, that insurance, title insurance, is actually really inexpensive.
Right.
You know, to be able to cover, you know, it's going to cost you at a maybe $1,000, $1,500, whatever, to be able to cover that whole mortgage if there's a problem. So you're going to scrub it to make sure you're not going to pay that off.
But this is what's interesting. So on your purchase agreement, it says you want a warranty deed, which means that seller is warranting that deed, right? I mean, so then when you have to buy insurance on top of that, I think it's confusing for a lot of people. They're like, why should I have to buy any insurance? Aren't you already doing that as part of your job?
Well, and the warranty deed is the seller warranting title that they know that they have. So if they don't know about a situation, they couldn't possibly provide a warranty. But what's really great about our land record system in the United States is that we have all those records dating back from the first grant. Other countries don't have that. And I've actually talked to people in other countries that are, when I tell them what I do, they're like, wow, I so wish I could buy title insurance and that we had a great land records system in our country. Yeah.
Huh. Ireland, I bet you does.
Well,
just saying.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I mean, there was a lot of planning, like even when you're flying in an airplane and you look down and you see how everything is just kind of like in these perfect little squares.
Yeah.
You know, our forefathers really planned how they wanted things to work and followed through on that. And you don't see that in all these different countries. I lived in Switzerland for a while, and I could still, after 2 years, not find my way around very well.
Yeah.
It's not planned out as well.
It just isn't. And, you know, you really have to know it or grow up with it to really have down.
That's like Eden Prairie, isn't it, Denny? It's taking you a while to figure that out, too. I mean, those streets don't make as much sense as downtown Minneapolis.
Yes, I have a GPS around my neck at all times.
Thank God for GPS.
And a tracker chip.
Yeah.
Just in case we lose you.
That little button.
Flare gun.
You know, who else is here is Travis Where's Whitford Denny? With Bay Equity Home Loans. And we're going to talk probably in the next segment. We'll talk about kind of the evolution is it's what's happened in the mortgage industry here since, you know, when we were going crazy in 2004, 2005, 2006. I just met with two people this week that both bought their house in 2005.
Mm.
And I mean, I'll tell you, we're really pushing that value yet, even from what they paid for it, you know, till today. And so you need to, if you're going to kind of compare to those values, you've got to be in not certain pricing segments or kind of like, I call it that lifestyle segment, you know, you're on a golf course or you're on a lake, you know, that those came up a little more. But if there's nothing super, super special about it, that you could be in trouble, you know, of getting the value out from those 2005 times. So.
Well, especially in some of those outer suburbs, we're still seeing that. I mean, I was just out this week in a couple outer suburbs where we're still coming back. I mean, those values are almost back to what they paid for it back in 8, 9, 10. I mean, you know, so they're still coming back. So, but the good news is this. We seem to be in a recovering market. We seem to see prices continually going in the right direction. We're giving people more options. I think in a lot of people that have you know, paid down mortgages over that amount of time too. Look at their payoffs, because sometimes your payoff also provides an opportunity for you to actually get out of that property and move forward to another opportunity as well. So,
yeah, it's funny, you know, now I'm going into my 20th year of real estate, which is crazy how fast it goes. But for most people that listen, know that I grew up in a family that was realtors. And but it's funny now. What we're going to talk about is kind of like, hey, what it used to be like. And that, I remember those conversations all the time. I mean, when the rates were, you know, 18%. I mean, Denny, you talked about one time you got a home equity line,
home
wasn't
equity
it?
Home equity loan was, yes, 18%.
At 18%.
Seems fair.
Yeah.
And I could have assumed a loan at 17.
Yeah. You got so it from Vinny on the corner, though. But it was, you know, he seemed like a straightforward guy.
I'd like to see your abstract. But anyways, what we're going to talk about, I mean, it's going to pale in comparison to what that used to be like that. But it's going to be kind of interesting because, I mean, Andy, how long have you been licensed?
Just about 18 years.
18 years. I mean, Travis, you've been around.
Start of my 20th year this
20th year.
Year,
yeah. So we're gonna be able to go back a little here in the next segment and just kind of talk where it was, where it's coming, and where it's kind of switching over again.
Good news. We'll do that very thing and invite our listeners to join in. We have more segments to come here on this Saturday on St. Patrick's Day as we talk more real estate. You stay with us here on 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And welcome back to this portion of the Real Estate Show here on 830 WCCO. Chris and Andy with some special guests on this St. Patrick's Day. Guys, where do we go from here?
Special guests, Cindy Coble with TitleSmart and Mr. Travis Whitford from Bay Equity Home Loans. And we thought we'd talk a little about the evolution of what's happened. I mean, since our huge excitement in the early 2000s up to 2006, what was happening there in 2000, you know, previous to that, and what kind of loans were happening?
Well, excuse me. Back then, you know, it was truly the wild, wild west of mortgages, and there was really no such thing or no analysis of ability to repay. The majority of the loans out there that you could obtain were essentially, you know, credit score and a heartbeat, you know, more or less.
What do you mean repay?
Ability to repay the mortgage.
Who?
The borrower.
The borrower.
The borrower taking out the mortgage, the ability to repay it.
And why were the lenders doing that?
Yeah,
why were they allowing that kind of loosey-goosey rules?
Because they were making so much money behind the scenes, they just didn't care.
I think they didn't want the party to stop. I think what was happening too, though, they were trying to keep that housing market, which, if you remember back, what was it, 2003 or 4?
You told me you blacked out before 2012.
I blacked out from 2006 to 2012. Then I woke up again and was reborn.
Oh, so you do know about prior to 2006.
Yep. Okay. Just a little bit. But no, I mean, remember, we'd be at dinner parties and they'd talk about, oh, the stock market crashed today, but thank God my house went up 12% this month. I mean, it was ridiculous. Housing was one of the only sectors that was hot back then. And the government and everybody else was involved in it, trying to keep that thing moving. I mean, they were just saying, hey, let's keep housing going. Hopefully everything else will pick up again. And that was the big kind of pre-crash before the crash. It was crazy.
Yeah, and these lenders were like, they just assumed that houses were going to always appreciate. So when they just basically gave a loan away for really no underwriting aspect at all, they lost sight that you know, here's a possibility that, you know, the values of these houses might come down. So they figured, you know, well, the house is still going to increase. I mean, if they don't make their payments, we'll just foreclose, resell the house. We're still in a positive position. You know, who cares?
Mm-hmm. We joke a lot about that all you needed was a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But in reality, you could. You could make up your own income. You could say, hey, we had to give it a fancy name. It needed to be a fancy name to be able to think that you were making $80,000 a year.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's like the two big types of loans. There's stated income, and then there was NINA loans, which stands for no income, no assets. So a stated income, you basically just state your income that you need to make the numbers work, you know, and depending on the underwriting scenarios for the company, it was like, you know, what's their title? Does it make sense? You know, okay. You know, and then the no income, no asset, that's literally just name and social security number on the loan application. You had no income, no assets listed, and they just assumed that you'd be able to bring the money to closing, and that was it.
Well, I think the lenders kind of looked at it like, hey, it's kind of an investment for us, meaning that I'll make the money off of them. If it goes bad, I'll just get the house back and sell it, and we'll make a whole ton of money too.
Right. And then the home values
and then it hit.
Declined, and, you know. Yeah.
Well, and I think that part of it, though, too, you guys, was that people started getting desperate. A lot of it was the three neighbors all selling for $600. The one that dropped to $575 all of a sudden got sold, and it started the trend of the race to the bottom. And people were literally discounting to beat the other guy to sell their house. I was watching builders do that with assets, with land, where we were – you'd buy your lots at $140,000, and the builders that were still selling were selling them at $120,000. And then you're like, well, I can't sell for $120,000. By the time we dropped ours to $120,000, they already had $100,000. And they were working through those assets faster and more aggressively. The one thing that I think that we all learned is that when times do change, don't sit and wait for them to come back. You need to react on the spot, unfortunately, in some situations where liquidation at the current prices is better than waiting for potentially a better price down the road. Because as you're paying those payments and the interest, and I mean, I watched tons of builders. I mean, there's probably builders listening to this that are still, you know, sad over it. They lost everything. I mean, they literally were holding on for that market to come back, lost everything trying to do the right thing, paying the interest payments, and the notes were coming due. And there was, it was literally a bloodbath for years. That's why I say I blacked out, because I don't even want to remember those days. But if we learned anything, we learned that, you know, when your radar, your little flag goes up in your head and you're saying, this seems weird. It is weird. And maybe you should be cautious when you're entering that in arena, you know?
Well, let's like post 2006 then. So after everything started kind of going and everyone started getting, like Andy was saying, a little desperate and starting to kind of get rid of their stuff or walking from it, not paying from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the mortgage industry tightened up big time.
Then it got real tight. So, there was essentially an over-aggressive analysis on that ability to repay, you know, going from one extreme to the other with, you know, not having to consider any of that and then to being overly aggressive with it. So it kind of started where they wanted like everybody's debt to income ratios to be at 43% or under. What debt to income ratio means, it's your gross monthly income compared to your new mortgage or your mortgage payment and the debts that are on your credit report. Now the agencies, like when I say agencies, I mean Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, they had like a, you know, like a 7-year grace period where they don't have to necessarily comply with that 43% debt ratio. Non-conforming loans have to apply with that. That non-conforming loans would be jumbo financing and stuff like that. So that 7-year leeway. So a lot of times I know we've had people ask in the past, you know, like whatever happened with this, you know, that 43 debt ratio and stuff. And there's just that variance that government gave, you know, Fannie, Freddie, and FHA. And I just got a feeling that, you know, that's probably going to go away, because the debt ratios that you can get qualified for right now, it's like 50% on conventional loans. And like FHA, you can, you know, 55%. So that's a lot higher than the 43 that they're trying to target.
And
at.
So then, I mean, what happened or correlated in the real estate industry is then people started, it was very interesting. What they would do is that you'd start seeing the foreclosures starting to come. Mm-hmm. And so in the same neighborhood where you paid $600,000 for your house and there's houses going for $400,000, what people were doing was going and buying that other house,
yep,
and then letting their house go. And then that was what was destroying all these neighborhoods.
We called that buy and bail.
Yeah, the buy and bail.
And we saw that a ton. Especially in the high-end neighborhoods, that $1.2 million house down the street that now is getting liquidated at $425,000, they take cash, they buy the house, and then they would let theirs go because of the discrepancy on their what they owed and what it was worth. So, yeah.
But the lenders got smart about that, too.
Yep. They, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, when they do that buy and bail originally, you know, they'd, you know, get a loan normally, but, you know, they'd either have a falsified lease or a lease that they just never intended on making the payments on the property that they were vacating and keeping that rent. And, lenders got really strict where if you are buying, you know, a property without your current property being sold, I mean, there was a large reserve requirement, mm-hmm. you know, a larger down payment requirement.
Well, wasn't there rules with the upgrading concept, too, if you were upgrading versus downgrading? Like, if you were buying a smaller house, they were, you know, a lot of times really concerned.
Yeah, all that came into consideration, you know, if somebody's going from a single family house to, you know, big single family to a townhouse and like they're in their 30s, you know, that doesn't really make sense. You know, mm-hmm. somebody that's in their 60s, it makes sense.
We're going to go to a break and we'll bring Cindy back into the conversation, because that's about, I mean, you aren't old enough to be in the industry as long as we are. So we'll bring you back in post 2012.
Were you talking to me?
Yes, you
okay.
too.
All right, very good. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back on this St. Patrick's Day with more Real Estate Show here on 830 WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of the Real Estate Show here at 830 WCCO. Chris and Andy, for just joining us, brought some special guests in studio with them. Maybe you could tell folks who you did bring.
Yeah, Cindy Coble with Title Smart is with us, who can help us now post 2012. We're going to get back into what's been happening, and then Travis Whitford with Bay Equity Home Loans. And if you just tuned in, we've been talking about what kind of basically happened, what's happening with the mortgage industry, but what happened with the market and how it's evolved until we've got here today. And so I think we're post 2012 now, where we've kind of got to a point where now mortgages were starting to come back a little.
Yeah, mortgages are coming back. I mean, I think nowadays I think the underwriting is correct as far as, you know, there's everything is documented. People that shouldn't be buying, you know, can't buy, or people that shouldn't be buying that $500,000 house that can't afford it, can't get it. I think it's right. The credit evaluation of stuff, I think it's perfect right now is basically what I'm trying to say. And everybody can buy if they should be buying.
One of the things we forgot about was the buying credit. We missed that. We got it. What was it, like $7,500 that you got?
Yeah, I think it was, what was it?
$8,500, $7,500?
October 30th at 10:30 in the morning was, I thought, the end of the world, because they pulled back that tax credit that every first-time homebuyer that I was selling at the time was using to buy houses. That was the only last thing I was going to say that I actually did remember a little bit from that era. But what happened was I was really concerned that there was a lot of people buying their $100,000 house using FHA. Back then, it was only 3% down, I believe. Not even 3.5%. It was a lot less. And it was – or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was 2 point something. It was under 3.
Right. So you could buy that house with $3,000 out of your pocket, which could be a gift from your parents. Then you'd get an $8,500 tax credit from the U.S. government. So then you'd pay your parents back. So you're buying a house with zero money down, and you were getting paid to buy the house. But here's the good news. All those, you know, younger first-time buyers and opportunity buyers that were buying back then, now those houses that were $100,000 or $89,000 are now $170,000 to $260,000. And they've really, you know, shot it out of the park for values, and they won't let those go, which is a good thing.
Cindy, there were a lot of other programs that happened, like with credits or grants and all that kind of stuff, that some of that you had to pay back. Are we seeing, did you see the reflection of that? Because some people were getting huge gains from that, whatever, 2010 to 2014. But there's some of that stuff that you had to pay back. Were you guys seeing that from the title industry?
You mean like MHFA type loans and things like that?
Yeah.
I mean, they've, you know, when mortgages are harder to get, there'll be different programs that roll out that help with that. I know over the years in that time, they had some other tax credit programs like Take Credit, which I'm sure Travis remembers those tax credit programs. And then with MHFA, as far as like down payment assistance and no interest on those loans.
Yeah, well, those MHFA loans are still around and still really relevant and are used. You know,
but were they getting paid back is what I was getting at. I mean, are you seeing that some of those programs that people are doing? Because there were some that you had to stay in there for 7 years, and if you didn't stay in there for 7 years, you had to pay back money.
Weren't a lot of those like the city programs, though, too, where they were giving you zero interest, and if you live there so long, it gets forgiven? And
Or maybe it was the – maybe what I'm thinking about maybe is the when they redid your loans.
Oh.
You know what I mean? What's the word?
The HARP.
Yeah. When they did that, then you'd have to pay back some stuff. See, I blacked out too, Andy.
It makes it a lot easier when you just let her all go.
Yeah,
clear out the old head and
clear
start
completely
fresh.
Out.
There's been
okay.
So many changes, you know, over the last, you know, 10 years. It's hard to keep track of all those things.
Yeah, but again, we're getting a lot of loans that are happening now that are kind of some shades of the past, you know, because people are pretty bullish on what the housing market's doing and getting better, and so the lenders are laxing a little.
Yeah, they're I wouldn't say they're laxing a little. It just we're like I said earlier, we're perfect. We went from one extreme to the next, from, you know, 2004 to, you know, 2010, and we've just slowly but surely made it a little bit easier to obtain financing. And I truly believe that the way it's set up right now is just perfect.
They're laxing. But anyways, shared driveways. let's go to Cindy and say shared driveways. Yeah, we'll get texts on that one. But anyways, shared driveways is another thing. I mean, if we got Cindy here, we got to talk about some title issues.
Yeah.
What happens with a shared driveway that doesn't have a maintenance agreement with it?
Ooh, well, I just had this case come up the other day where like four people are sharing a driveway and they don't have a maintenance agreement. And really what's boiling down to is the guy's having a issue with a really bad neighbor. And I'm like, ooh, that's kind of luck of the draw when you don't have that. So if you have a driveway maintenance agreement, it's basically talking about who's going to shovel, who's responsible for what, and then
repairs,
you can have this harmonious peace between all of the people. And anytime you get new financing, if that is the access to the property, the lenders are now requiring that. Seems like back in the day, a lot of that was just kind of overlooked.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when you, like if you're listing a property and you see two people are sharing a driveway, that's something that you could ask your title company to get a copy of.
Which is nice. And that's what I was kind of getting to is that if there's three, four, two, I mean, a lot of times it's two people, but there might be three or four people that are involved. And if there's no shared agreement, it's probably kind of but you can't talk yet. It's really kind of important that you have that in place because, I mean, you got to know what you're getting into, but I'm really glad to hear that the lenders are requiring that.
Oh, yeah. And especially you'll see a lot of it on properties up north where multiple families have like lake homes and cabins and they're sharing that.
Danny, is it okay if Andy talks now?
Yeah.
Put his mic back.
All right, his mic is on.
Okay, go.
Well, first of all, I was going to agree with you about the loose thing, but with the lending. But anyway, no, the going back to the driveway thing, though, are we talking about, though, a actual, well, almost like an easement enforceable document that's put onto the title that is enforceable? So if, for example, Chris is my, you know, driveway partner, and we both have this filed on our title,
right,
or our deed, and then he doesn't do his job, or he doesn't fulfill his obligations, and I do it for him. Can I lien his property for what he doesn't do for me?
You could litigate it.
Okay. So it's only as good as you guys want to agree to be. So if you do have the neighbor that kind of becomes the stinker and doesn't want to cooperate, it's enforceable, but yet it's not unless you want to spend a lot of money.
Right. I mean, it might just be that bad neighbor syndrome again. But gotcha. If you sell the property to somebody else, those responsibilities fall to that new owner.
I think it makes it easier to sell your property for sure.
I mean, at least
when there's rules that you can follow, people can make buying and selling decisions based on those rules. And then how they're enforced is another whole
story.
Even if
it's bad, at least I know what it is.
Right.
You know?
Gotcha.
But, Travis, those are things that when you guys are doing loans and all of a sudden you get into the process, these are kind of the things that kind of can kind of come up that, I mean, if they're requiring that, lenders requiring a maintenance agreement on that driveway, and your neighbor's not going to agree to it, I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah, it won't be all close. Yeah, I mean, we'll require a shared driveway agreement or whatever it's called, even on twin homes too. That you know, they look like a townhouse, but they're not part of an association. You also need the shared wall agreement too to be able to close.
You know, another thing I want to know, Cindy, there's a lot of times, and you'll see it around Lake Minnetonka, There's deeded lake access,
yeah,
and then there's access to the lake via an easement.
Yes.
What's the difference between
them? Ooh, it's a big difference. And so, you know, deeded lake access is actually deeded in the title, and we can ensure that in most cases as a title company by reviewing all of those research documents at the county, where an easement is just the right to use it, and it just keeps running forward, and so we don't insure those. And so it's a good question to ask, like if you're listing a property and you're a buyer that's looking at a property, is to be asking, you know, is it an easement or is it deeded? And then get a copy of that old document and review it for your satisfaction.
It's very important.
The title company
to know.
Can pull that out easily.
Yep.
Are there deeded easements?
Well, an easement is an agreement between the parties, and so it can be created through a deed. But it's not conveyed title.
You got that?
I only asked, sorry, because last week we had the guys on that were talking about the, you know, the Nisswa Brainerd Lakes area, and they were talking about this specific topic about getting off the lake and actually having the property that you maybe, you know, have 150 to 350,000 invested, and then you have the deeded access, and what are your rights? And I think that's, again, it comes down to what are the rules, and do you agree to them when you're buying that property? And then, you know, I think it's pretty easy. And then if we have a good title company making sure that what we interpret as being the rules actually are the rules, and to the point of where it's even insured, I think that, you know, that makes you a lot more comfortable making a buying decision.
Well, and that's why I think it's important to review the document, the actual recorded document, and how it was created. And what the intentions were, yeah.
And not just go off the hearsay of all the neighbors?
Right, because I've had a lot of people call me and go, hey, I have, like, deeded access, or, you know, I've... And I'm like, no, you have an easement.
Right. Well, we've heard the same thing. The 30 lots off the lake here, they all have access. They're deeded access. And it's not. They have the right to go across it to get in their boat and go out on the lake. And
right.
I tell you what, let's take our usual break here. We have more show to come on this St. Patrick's Day, more real estate show here on 830 WCCO. Stay with us.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And welcome back to this portion of the real estate show here on 830 WCCO. Chris and Andy in studio with the special guests. And guys, we have a few minutes to go before the end of the show. Where do we go now?
Yeah, we got Cindy Coble with Title Smart. Talked a little about shared driveways, difference between abstract and torrents, whole deeded access versus an easement. But I think it's important to note that if there's people out there with a shared driveway that don't have a maintenance agreement, they could probably reach you and get a hold of you at Title Smart.
Oh, absolutely. You could reach me at my office at 651-779-3075, or just go to our website. You can link to me there at title-smart.com.
Okay. Andy, you know, a lot of people sometimes say, oh, no, we don't have any easements. Well, almost every lot has an easement, and it's a drainage and utility easement.
You betcha.
Why don't you explain that?
Right. So, you know, if you've got city utilities, you're going to have, and in some cases, not even that, but you're going to have probably some type of utility easement, which is typically like right around the outside edge of the property line, about 5 to 10 feet in. So if you're going to build or put a shed in or build some kind of outbuilding, you want to be cognizant of that and check with the city first.
And sometimes people just put it right on the corner, you know, so hey, that's my boundary line.
Right.
But in a developable area, there's utility and drainage easements all around the whole property.
We just dealt with the all-time high water line, 150 feet above the all-time high water line on a new development we had where that ran right up into the middle of the yards. So everybody was looking at these lots saying, oh, the conservation easement for the natural wildlife is just on the back 20 feet of the lot. And then you end up having where the actual, like, all-time high water line, you can't put anything in there either way. You can mow the grass in there, but you can't, like, put sheds and shelters. So these easements are very important. As you're looking at a plat, as I call, I want to look at the final recorded plat that's actually recorded at the city so you can see, and they'll notify you, and they'll show you all of the easements that are on there. And then I even go farther, and then I would have a title search done on it too, just to say, what else am I looking at when I'm buying this lot? Especially if it's a one-off lot that's been there for 25, 30 years and somebody wants to buy it to build their house in an existing neighborhood, there's usually a reason why that one got overlooked.
In there, you just talked about a conservation easement. I think that one's kind of interesting because there's a lot of conservation easements that are part of your lot.
Right.
And so it's like what it states, and you'll see the little signs. It's typically the giveaway. It says you can't, don't do nothing beyond this point.
Well, and just so you know here, those that are listening, you can take those little signs and you move them back to 20 feet and you start mowing that grass. And then they're going to stop by after you moved in with the as-is survey. And the DNR guy is going to walk around and they're going to say, nope, from this point, you keep mowing this and you're in trouble. And they will come back and remark that because it is on the survey. It's not just where somebody thought they should put it.
I was just going to re-say your name for saying that, and then you kind of redeemed yourself.
Well, no, because I see it all the
you
time.
You told them not to cheat.
I think it's perception, though. People think their backyard's going to be bigger, and in today's developments, they put all these easements and things in the backyards, and now their backyard's only, you know, 25, 30 feet deep, and they want more space, and they're like, who cares? We'll just mow this grass a little farther and a little farther. Eventually,
They'll
get you.
Yeah, and you just don't mess with it. So, Travis Christensen, we talked a lot about you know, the evolution of what's happened in the industry. You've been in it for 20 years. What's it?
Wrong last name.
Did I say Christensen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That your girlfriend's buddy.
There's another dude from
Bay Equity.
You
wonder why you lost all those girlfriends back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Gretchen.
Travis got them.
I mean, Sally.
Yeah. Who told you? No. Anyways, Travis Whitford, Bay Equity Home Loans, been in it for 20 years. You can certainly help people navigate through the loan process. How do they get a hold of you?
TravisMNLoans.com or 651-755-3086.
We're ending up on the parade pretty soon.
Yeah, we've got this weekend and next weekend, and the weather's going to be perfect, so get out there, take a look at those houses. I've heard some of the builders have some of the best incentives and the best lot inventory they've had in a long time, so it's a great time to look at building that new house. And
we'll talk about lifestyle living. Want to live on the golf course, the Wilds. We've got 3 open houses over there this weekend. And I've also got another one for it's $1.5 million, but this house is as cool as it gets. It's actually got a kind of a portico that you enter, so you don't see the garages from the front, but you go through this basically a tunnel, up cave. I'm calling it a cave, and come back and then park in the back where there's a 5-car.
Did you see that Rambler just listed in Indian Hills in Edina? That's a hot house too, man. I tell you what, we just put that on the market this week. Go check out our website. It's in probably one of the most beautiful neighborhoods, any dying and nestled in there.
And location.
Location is spectacular.
That's fantastic.
That'll be a hot one. We'll go quick, so take a peek.
How much time do we got left, Denny?
We have about two minutes to go.
We got all Chris's old girlfriends calling in to confirm that, yes, he did call them all the wrong names.
I don't remember those names, though. April 21st, we do have how to get your house ready to sell. So if you want to do a seminar in Edina, right down the street from Mr. Andy Prasky's new listing. So if you want to come and do that, we'll talk a lot about how to get it ready. And I talk about positioning a home. Mm-hmm. Rather than staging a home, because positioning a home is the whole marketing aspect of it. And sometimes, people take them in intervals and say, okay, we have to stage a house perfect, but we're staging it to eventually support our hypothesis of why someone's going to buy that.
Correct.
So it's positioning your house.
Good, good. I know a lot of people, Denny, too, last week were looking at the cabin searches.
Oh, yeah.
And we kind of jumped around. Go ahead and get a hold of Chris and I. We had, Mark and Brent in here last weekend from up at the REMAX up in Nisswa. They were in studio, and we had several people ask, how do we get a hold of those guys? Just go to our websites, Prasky.com or ChrisRooney.com. We'll put you in touch, get you on a cabin search. But they are looking for inventory, too. So if you guys are thinking about selling those cabins, let us know, and we'll get you in touch with those guys.
Not today, though, because we're going to celebrate our heritage today.
Yes.
I'm going to go work open houses. What are you talking about?
Okay.
And again, according to the forecast, any open houses today or tomorrow should be pretty good because of the forecast.
I hope so.
Get out there. All right, again, how do we get in touch with you guys individually now, everybody?
Prasky.com.
And ChrisRooney.com, the best way to do it.
Outstanding. We'll be back again next week with more of the Real Estate Show. Hope you join us then here on 830-WCCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.